you would open your Bibles to John chapter 4. John chapter 4. We're going to be looking at the woman at the well, which is a story that's familiar to pretty much anyone who's been in church for any length of time. This has probably been one of the most spiritually transformative or liberating stories that I have ever studied in Scripture. Really helped me to understand my sin, its origins, and how to avoid sin and temptation. The story here, we're just going to kind of go through it bit by bit. But remember, what we're doing is we are looking at our own souls, our own sins, our own temptations, and we're looking to uncover the deeply hidden yet very subtle lies that the devil has told us that we believe. The truth of God that we've exchanged, the lies that we've believed, and to see how faith in what God has said and his character and his promises is what gives us the victory over our sins. In John chapter 4, verse 3, it says, Jesus left Judea, departed again to Galilee. He had to go through Samaria, and he comes to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. That would be 12 o'clock noon. There comes a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus says to her, give me something to drink. For his disciples were gone away to the city to buy meat. Then says the woman of Samaria to him, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it was that says to you, give me to drink, you would have asked of him and he would have given you living water. The woman says to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? Jesus answered and said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never thirst, but the water I will give him will be in him a well of water springing up to everlasting life. The woman says to him, sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, nor come here to draw. Jesus said to her, go call your husband and come here. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, you have well said, I have no husband. For you have had five husbands, and he whom you now have is not your husband, and that you said truly. The woman said to him, sir, I perceive you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and you say in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus says to her, woman, believe me, the hour comes when you will neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship, you know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour comes, and now is, when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeks such to worship him. God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman says to him, I know that Messiah comes, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. Jesus says to her, I that speak to you am he. Upon this came his disciples and marveled that he talked with the woman. Yet no man said, what are you seeking or why do you talk with her? The woman then left her water pot, went her way into the city and says to the men, come see a man which told me all things that I ever did. Is not this the Christ? All right. Now, couple things about the story. We know now about the lady. We know about her life. We know about her background. We know those things. To understand the culture of that day, for the men would be out working in the fields. It was a very agrarian culture. There would be a few of them that would have what we would call jobs. They would be like tradesmen. But most people were more self-sustainable. If you think back to the Civil War era in our country, unemployment would have been somewhere around 90%. And you go, wow, that's insane. Nobody had jobs. No, everybody was self-sustaining. You had a piece of land, and you farmed it. You didn't need a job. You would trade your food and your crops and your pelts from animals you killed for whatever you couldn't produce yourself. That is the way this society was. So the men would be up. They'd be up breaking dawn. They'd be out working. And then the ladies would be left taking care of the kids, doing housework, that type of stuff. And the ladies would go to the well first thing in the morning. You don't want to go out when it's really hot, so they go to the well first thing in the morning. And that's where they would kind of They've gossiped and they've, shoot the breeze and they talk about everything going on. And that was kind of the social gathering. And then as the sun got a little bit hotter, they'd have to go back and start getting all the cooking and cleaning, take care of the kids, all that type of stuff. And then they come back in the evening to do the same thing. This woman, though, comes at noon when it's hot, when everybody else is at home with their families eating. Okay, she comes by herself to the well. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say the reason she's coming by herself means that there's got to be something wrong, either with her or with her culture, those type of things. It is safe to say that she was probably an outcast among the ladies. Men are known for being jealous, but women can be very jealous as well. And if you know of a woman that gets around, and she likes to be around men and has been from man to man to man to man, chances are she's probably not going to fit in very well with the rest of the ladies because they don't want her around their husband. Okay, so she is kind of the person that has that reputation. She is that girl. She's the one that everybody knows. You know, you tell your daughters don't grow up like her, and you tell your sons you stay away from women like her. That's this woman. So she's kind of a social outcast, but she's also a Samaritan. The Jewish people of that day would not even speak to Samaritans. Okay, they would not even acknowledge their existence. Jesus comes. This woman's coming to the well. She's expecting no one to be there because everyone would have gone about their day's business. So she can go get her water, go home, not have to worry about people calling her all kinds of names, looking down at her, ignoring her, all those type of things. And there is a Jewish man sitting there by himself. And he initiates the conversation and says, "Hey, I'm thirsty. Can you give me some water?" Because they would have to have a bucket to drop down in the well and pull up the water, that type of stuff. And she is just shocked that this Jewish man would speak to her. So Jesus says to her, if you knew what God could do for you, if you knew God's gift, you would be asking me for a drink of water. Now, Jesus is going to take the woman's physical thirst to teach her about her soul and her spiritual and the spiritual truths we want to get today. Okay, he says that he would have given you living water. Okay, the woman goes, "Okay, you know, give me your sales pitch. What's living water?" And Jesus says that if you drink this water out of this well, you will be thirsty again. You will have to keep coming back. Day after day after day after day after day after day. And every day, when you drink, the water's going to taste good, you're going to feel great for a little bit, but then you're going to get thirsty again, and you're going to have to come back and get more. I'm going to give you, though, water where you will never thirst again. Now, it's interesting to note that she leaves her water pot at the end of the story. She doesn't even get physical water after meeting Jesus. And she leaves it. Right? And then goes into town to tell everybody about Jesus. So, the woman is intrigued. Okay, if you had to take a walk through the village of landmines, of gossip, and people glaring at you and looking down at you to get water every day, and all of a sudden you can just stay home and mind your own business and not have to worry about the neighbor peeking out and whispering about you as you walk down the street, hey, who doesn't want the water where you don't have to thirst again, don't have to go to the well anymore, don't have to do your chores type thing? So she wants it. Jesus then begins to get to the heart of the issue. He says, "Go tell your husband to come here and we'll have a conversation." Her answer is, "I don't have a husband." And you're like, "You're right. Okay? You have had 5 husbands." Okay? No, this is not a widow. This is not a woman whose husbands have died. This is a woman who has been from man to man to man to man. Marries one guy, divorced, marries another guy. 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 And now she's shacked up with some guy. They're not married. They're living together. That's why he says the man you now have is not your husband. Now, Jesus goes immediately to this issue because that is the issue that we're going to be looking at today, and that's what he's talking about with the water. She goes from the well every single day. She goes back, go back, go back, go back, go back. And then she goes from man to 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 man. He's showing her that there is a thirst within her. A physical thirst where she goes to the well to get water. And there is also a thirst that she is trying to satisfy with a man. Now, this, by the way, is very applicable to people in our culture today. Okay, not just women, but also to men. This very much so applies to guys with pornography. Okay, there is a desire that they have that they think will be satisfied through looking at pornography. And they go every day, every day, every day, every day, every day, every day, and they're never satisfied. This goes for people when it comes to divorce and remarriage, divorce and remarriage, divorce and remarriage, divorce and remarriage. This comes from, I got to have a boyfriend, I got to have a girlfriend, and as soon as I break up with one, I got to find another one. This is our culture in a nutshell, is this story right here. But it goes well beyond sexual sin and goes into things like alcohol and drugs and everything else. Okay, if you have a besetting sin, if you have a pattern in your life where you wake up from time to time and you just go, why do I have to have this, I want to do this, I desire this, be it gluttony, be it alcohol, be it drugs, be it pornography, be it a boyfriend, be it a girlfriend, I just need this, I just need this, I just need this. This story applies to you. And I think that would safely say that that applies to every single one of us. Okay, whether that is I have to go shopping to buy things. Okay? What it's showing there is that sin is showing that there is a spiritual thirst that you have. You have a spiritual thirst that you are trying to satisfy with natural things. Okay? Be it a young lady, okay, who becomes sexually promiscuous, and she goes from guy to guy to guy to guy. We've seen young ladies like that. What is it? As soon as a boyfriend breaks up with them, I got to have me a man. I got to have me a man. We've seen grown women like that. We've seen men like that. Okay, we see boys like that when it comes to pornography. We see that everywhere. I got to have it. 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 Now, what we have taught people is the exact opposite of what Jesus teaches. What we have taught people is those are just normal desires that you can't turn off. You just have to slap your hand and say, don't do that. Okay, that's what we tell boys when it comes to pornography. Okay? You're always going to want it. You're always going to think it. You're always going to desire it. You just don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. That's not what Jesus tells the woman at the well. He says the desire can be completely turned off. How many of y'all have ever heard that before? That your desire for your besetting sin can completely be turned off. It almost sounds too good to be true, because we have been programmed that the desire for that sin will always be there. You just have to have the self-control to say no. There's just one massive problem, and that is we don't have the self-control to say no. Okay? The Christian life that most of us have been taught is the white-knuckle experience. You really want to do it, but you just grab on tight until your knuckles turn white and don't do it. That is not what Jesus teaches the woman at the well. He teaches her that her desire for sexual sin can be completely, totally turned off. Right? That is what Jesus is teaching her. Now that is a completely different perspective on sin than what we have been taught growing up in church our whole lives. We've been taught, well, the desire for pornography, the desire for gluttony, the desire for a boyfriend, the desire for a girlfriend, the desire to get married. All of those things, they're just there, and you just have to deal with them in the appropriate manner. Okay? But that's not what Jesus says. Jesus says that he offers something that can satisfy the thirst of the soul. You see, the woman's problem is not a man. It's not. If the problem is a man, then what's the solution? A different man, right? We all know this, you know. If it's not working out with the person you're with, it's got to be the person you're with, right? So you ditch them and you go find somebody else. If you're with a blonde and she doesn't make you happy, well, then the problem's with the blonde. You go get a brunette. Duh. Okay, if Bud Light doesn't satisfy you, you need Jack Daniels. Duh. That's the way we think. If this gun doesn't make me happy, then I need this gun. If this car will make me happy, then I need that car. if this truck's not going to make me happy, then I need to put a lift kit on it. Okay? That's the way we think. I bought 15 purses, and I'm still miserable because there's another purse out there if I buy. Another pair of shoes out there. Okay? That is the way we think. The problem is I haven't found the right man. You don't think that if you sat down with this woman and asked her about her sexual history and about all her divorces, she would say, well, there was the first guy, and you know, he just really wasn't, you know, he wasn't really rich and he wasn't a good provider and it was just so stressful with finances. And so the second guy, he was really rich, but he wasn't very sensitive. So the third guy, he was really, really sensitive and really, really rich, but he was kind of old. And, you know, he just wasn't very fun to be around. The next guy, he had a great sense of humor, and he was really fun to be around, but he was kind of young and immature. You don't think that she could sit there and give you a legitimate reason why she got divorced from every single guy? In her mind. But there's a problem. The problem is this. What were you created for? Sex? Marriage? You were created for God, for His glory. That's what you were created for. That is the reason you exist. Okay? There is within you a desire that can only be satisfied by God Himself and living for His glory. I believe, was it Thomas Aquinas that said, maybe it was Augustine, said that if I see within myself a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, then the solution must be something outside of this world. That I was not created for something in this world, I was created for something outside this world. Which is the truth. You weren't created to see how much alcohol you can consume. You weren't created to win the NBA championship. Have you ever noticed what happens when they win a championship? They shove a microphone in their face within 2 minutes of winning. Are you going to be back next year? Why? I mean, it's not enough. What happened to the greatest basketball player that ever lived, Michael Jordan? Oh, I know. I said that just to tick you off, Bob. I said it just to tick you off. Okay, so guess this is what happens, okay? I love you, Bob. So what happens after he won the championship? He went and played baseball. And stunk. Why? Because it's not enough. If you want to see something that is absolutely mind-blowing, go and watch or read his Hall of Fame acceptance speech. Because here is, considered by many, not all, the greatest basketball player ever, getting inducted to the Hall of Fame, and all he does is trash the coach from junior high that didn't put him on the team, and trash all the other people that didn't believe he could start, and all the other people. Why? Because winning NBA championships, being considered a great basketball player, millions of dollars, it's not enough. It's not enough. I mean, young men chase what all the NFL players have. They chase what all the actors have. Everybody wants all the fame, the fortune, all of it. And then you see this guy who marries a supermodel, and then he cheats on her with somebody else, and you go, well, that's because you weren't created to be married to a supermodel. You won't be happy no matter how pretty she is. And that's the lie you tell yourself, by the way, when you're looking at pornography. Well, the reason I feel miserable is because there's a prettier woman out there. Okay? The reason you feel miserable is you weren't created for that. There's a better man out there. Yeah, and if you married him, you'd just be just as miserable. There's a better man, there's a better woman, there's a better house, there's a better car, there's a better gun, there's a better purse, there's a better pair of shoes, there's a better outfit. If I lost all the weight and I looked and, you know, I was a size 2, well, you can always be a size 0. Okay, that's just the way we think. There's always more, always more, always more, always more. But you were not created for any of that. You were created for God. That's what you were created for. Let me ask you a question. How much money did Jesus have? 0. How many changes of clothes did Jesus have? The clothes on his back. How big was Jesus' house? He didn't have one. How nice was Jesus' pillow? He didn't even have a pillow. Okay? How nice was everything Jesus had? He didn't have anything but the clothes on his back. But he had a really hot girlfriend, didn't he? No. Jesus was 33 years old and had never been on a date. Okay, that, now from our standpoint, that's what we would call a loser, right? No, I'm just being for real. 33, never had a girlfriend, never been on a date, never kissed a girl, still a virgin. Okay? Doesn't own a car, doesn't own a house. Okay? We would look at this and we would say, this must be the most miserable man on planet Earth, right? What hobbies did he have? We know he went fishing with other people. He may have liked to fish. But when you look at his life, if I was to offer you the life of Jesus, how many of you would accept it? How many of you want to be my age and single? But how many of you think Jesus was miserable? Jesus was filled with joy and was the most joyful, happy person, the most well-adjusted psychologically person ever on planet Earth. So what does that tell you when you're 15 years old and need a girlfriend? No, you don't. What does that tell you when you're 25 years old and you need a new truck? No, you don't. You need a new purse. You need new clothes. You need new shoes. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. Oh, forgot the big one. He had the best political system around. He did. I mean, his political party, they were in power. No. He was in an overrun country by one of the most oppressive world powers that the world has ever seen. You see, what we do is we tell ourselves a lie. And that is, if XYZ, I will be happy. I feel miserable. If I look at porn, I will be happy. I am miserable. If I had a husband, I would be happy. I am miserable. If I had a wife, I would be happy. If I was, by the way, I can bring you to people, if that's your thinking, they're saying, I'm miserable. If I was divorced, I'd be happy. I'm hungover. If I was sober, I'd be happy. Okay? There are homeless people. My sister met a homeless guy one time that used to be vice president of Southwest Airlines and was miserable, and he gave it up to live on the streets. And you know what? There's a guy next to him saying, if I was vice president of Southwest Airlines, I'd be so happy. No, you were not created for business success. You were not created for money. You were not created for sex. You were not created for marriage. You were not created for children. You were not created for fashion. You were not created to be a bodybuilder or be smoking hot. You were not created for any of those things. You were created for God. And if you do not have satisfaction in God, guess what you will do? You will chug and chug and chug from the well every single day. And you know what? You have to come back for more. You have to come back for more. You have to come back for more. By the way, that's the very definition of addiction. Okay? We would look at this woman and say, oh, you know, maybe she had some bad luck. If you were to change husband here and put in cocaine, you know what we'd say? She's an addict. You know, you can be addicted to shopping. You can need cars, trucks, guns, shoes, tennis shoes, man's approval, steak, brownies, ice cream.
Guns.
Okay? Say it again. We can be that way. But you know, we're showing that we are no different than the woman at the well. Her problem was more socially unacceptable. Okay? We have socially acceptable and socially unacceptable. Okay, that's the way we have it. Is that it's okay to have, you know, how many cars does Jay Leno have? I mean, boo-goodles. Can you imagine if he had that many wives? What would people think about Jay Leno? Man, there's a major problem with that guy. But we go, oh, he's just a car collector. She's just a husband collector. What's the difference? It's the truth. But you see, they all reveal that there is something very deeply wrong. So in Romans, it tells us that we exchange the truth of God for a lie. So let's ask, what lie is this woman believing? A man will bring her satisfaction. Okay, to believe that lie, what truth does she have to reject? Okay, God is the one who satisfies. So she says, God is not the one who satisfies. I must have a man. By the way, this is almost every single person you'll ever meet. There are some people who are content in their singleness, but most of them, there is something wrong with me because I'm 19 and single. I must be unattractive to the opposite sex. Okay, and for some people, it's I'm 12 and don't have a boyfriend, and that's ridiculous. Okay, but here's the truth. What you are saying then is that God is not enough. I must have a man. I must have a woman. I must have a boy. I must have a girl. So if you've exchanged the truth, that is that God alone satisfies, for a lie that sex, drugs, alcohol, money, fame, prestige, food, guns, cars, fill in the blank, satisfies. What is the solution to sin? Well, you have to reject the lie, and you have to believe the truth of God. You have to reject the lie that I have to have a man to be happy, and you have to believe the truth that God alone satisfies. Now, let's take the illustration of thirst that Jesus uses here, because this is a very powerful illustration. How many of you in here would volunteer to pay cash to drink out of a truck stop toilet? I guarantee you every single person in here would give me every penny in their wallet to drink out of a truck stop toilet.
I'm sure if you're thirsty.
If I put you in a desert for 3 days. If I put you in a desert for 3 days, you will swim in a septic tank. If I get you to the point where you are about to die for lack of water, you would drink urine out of a bottle. And by the way, people have before. Okay, guys that are, you know, I mean, people who are, lost at sea and they can't drink the salt water. They will eat fish eyeballs. They will squeeze the eyeballs to get the juice in their mouth. No one in their right mind would do that. But you know what? If you're thirsty enough, you'll do it. Now, how many of y'all think that there was a time in this woman's life, perhaps, that she just swore off men altogether? Maybe after like the third divorce. I am never dating again. That's it. All men are pigs. I am never. Do you think that was a possibility? I mean, I've seen enough women and men who've gone through this, and I'm done forever, never again. But what happens? Well, you get thirsty enough. You got to have that approval. You got to have that feel. You got to have the butterflies. You got to have the sex. You got to have the whatever it is. So what is the solution according to Jesus? Well, let me ask you this. If you are tempted to drink out of a toilet, what does that tell you about yourself? You're thirsty. So, if I see somebody on all fours drinking out of a toilet, do I slap them across the face and say, "That's stupid, don't drink out of that toilet"? No, what do? I go get them some water. It's pure, in a glass. And I say, "You must be very thirsty. Drink this." And what happens if they drink the water? Do I have to worry about them drinking out of the toilet anymore? No. Why? Because they're not thirsty anymore. And if you're not thirsty, you won't have that desire. How many of y'all have had this morning when you woke up just this burning desire to drink out of the toilet? Why? Because right next to it, you had a sink and you could drink the pure water out of it. And so when you're thirsty, you don't drink out of the toilet, you drink out of the sink. When this woman is thirsty, spiritually, is God present where she could cry out to him and be satisfied in him? Yes. Does she believe that? No. What does she believe? She believes the lie, if I drink out of the toilet of sexual immorality, I'll be happy. How many of y'all think if she marries guy number six, that it'll be a wonderful, happy marriage? It won't be. Why? Because no matter how awesome this guy may be, she has a spiritual problem. She has a very deep spiritual problem. Okay? Now, if the desire to drink out of the toilet can be shut off by drinking pure water, do you think the desire for your sin can be shut off in the same way? The answer is yes. What you have to do, though, is identify the lie and then believe the truth. So if I am a shopping addict, and I wake up, and it's been a rough week, and I want the high of finding the perfect gun. Okay, I'm going to go find the perfect gun. And so I go find the perfect gun, and I go home, and I shoot it twice, and I go, man, this gun's awesome. But it's kind of a letdown. I'm going to go gun shopping again. Okay, now, what lie am I believing? That there is the ultimate gun that will bring me ultimate joy. So what truth do I have to believe? I was not created for guns. I was created for God. And that the joy and satisfaction I'm seeking is found in Him. Not in guns, alcohol, drugs, men, women, pornography, lying, money, praise of men, food, whatever. I have to go back to believe the truth. Now, this woman, though, does what we all do. When Jesus begins to talk about her adultery and talk about her divorces and all those things, she immediately covers up her sin with religion. Oh, you're a preacher. Preacher, I got a question for you. I've always wanted to know the answer to. Do we have to go to Jerusalem for worship? Let me ask you, is that this woman's problem? No. But you know what I have? I have the same thing happen. Preacher, does your church preach on predestination? Because, you know, I don't believe any of that stuff. You're a drunk. Why do you care about predestination? But you know what? We all do that. We all do it this way. Well, I was raised in a Baptist church. Or Presbyterian Church, Methodist Church, Church of Christ, Nazarene, whatever it is, it's the perfect denomination. I was raised in that, so we don't need to talk about my spiritual problem. We try to gloss over our problems in our soul with religion. But I read my Bible every day. I have had people who I have perfect attendance in Sunday school, preacher. You don't have to worry about all the people I've robbed. You don't need to worry about my adultery. You don't need to worry about my divorce. You don't need to worry about my ungodliness. And you don't have to worry about any of it because my parents took me to church from the time I was this high. We try to gloss over our spiritual problems with religion. We do. And so what we do is, well, I went to church, I took the Lord's Supper, I sang in the choir, I taught Sunday school, I work, help in Awana, I go to prayer meeting, I read my Bible every day, and I pray for my meals, and I know people who are caught up in horrid sin that will try to gloss over it by religious deeds. A lot of the guys that I went to college with, okay, I went to the Baptist College of Florida, and a lot of the guys that are pastors and preachers were some of the most horrific people you would ever meet. But if I lead a Bible study on Wednesday night with the youth group, I can ignore my spiritual problem. This, by the way, is a great temptation for pastors, is to have the appearance without having the reality. So when we see the woman, we say, okay, she's got a spiritual problem. She is not satisfied in God. That's the problem. The solution is to be satisfied in God. But before you can even get there, you have to get her to admit she has a problem. But she didn't have a problem. She's spiritual. She's got the ultra-deep spiritual questions going on. I mean, come on. Would an immature believer ask a question like this? No. Only the most mature people who'd studied the Bible the most would ask questions like this. I mean, this shows her spiritual maturity, right? I mean, look at her. I mean, just the fact that she would ask this question means she must have studied the Bible a lot and listened to all the rabbis, and she must know a lot. But it is pride. Okay, one of the greatest truths we exchange for a lie is the same thing with the rich young ruler, is we believe that we are here spiritually and we don't need what the person here spiritually needs. Even though our actions show us that we're not where we think we are spiritually. If we were to write a scale of 1 to 10, where are you spiritually? I can tell you as a pastor, some of the most sinful church members you will ever meet say they're a 7 or an 8. Why? Well, pride comes before destruction. And a haughty spirit before a fall. Because if I think of myself to be great, which that is, I believe a lie, okay, then all of a sudden I can deny all of my actions and my need of God. This is the Pharisees, by the way. The Pharisees were the most religious people you'd ever meet. And they were some of the most wicked, vile people you'd ever meet. And we say, how does that work? Because they covered up, what Jesus called them, whitewashed tombs. They covered up their sin with their religious deeds. If you are ever going to find victory or freedom over your besetting sin, you have to have an accurate view of yourself, and you have to believe the truth concerning you. That is, I did that. I actually, truly, totally said that. That came out of my mouth. I intentionally looked for that on the internet. I intentionally pursued this. I have heard the most bizarre explanations for sin. I don't know how the adultery happened. It just, she was there. That's not how adultery happens. She wasn't just there. She'd been there for months. Okay? That's not how, I just went to the party, and the next thing you knew, I was drunk. I mean, that's not reflective of my character. I'm not a drunk. I'm not an alcoholic. I mean, I barely drink at all. Maybe just a couple on the weekends. A couple of cases, but just a couple on the weekends. Why do you think the very first step of AA is, hi, my name's Dan and I'm an alcoholic? Because until you can admit that your sin is something you yourself wanted to do and did, there is no hope. There's not. But you know what we do? We do what the woman at the well does. We explain away, oh, Mr. Strange Jewish man, you're going to look down on me for all my divorces, but you don't really understand me. You don't really understand how spiritual I am. If you knew, it really was, none of those were my fault. I mean, you just had to know those guys. There is no help for that one. Just there's no help for the guy who looks at porn and says, I don't really have a problem. I really don't. I read my Bible this morning, and yeah, I know I was just bored, and I clicked the wrong link. No, you didn't. Tell the truth. Quit exchanging the truth for a lie. You know why you went to the party. You know why you went there. You know why you invited that person in your office. You know what you did. You know why it happened. You know that you did it. Just like this woman. And when I go acknowledge the truth concerning myself, that is, I have a major problem, then I can acknowledge the truth that my solution is Jesus Christ. I have believed that my problem was I was bored and the solution was porn. But now I realize that the problem is I am spiritually dry, and the solution is that Jesus Christ will satisfy my soul. The greatest way to turn off sinful desire is to be so satisfied in God, you desire nothing else. How do you do that? Well, you don't read the Bible to check off boxes that you're spiritual. You don't go to church to check off the box, yep, went to church every day, now God owes me. You actually seek to be happy in God, to be satisfied in God, to be filled with Him. When you open your Bible to read, you pray, Lord, I'm thirsty. Fill me. You know, we sing the song, you know, fill my cup, Lord, I lift it up, Lord. And we just ignore the meaning behind it. Right? When you're tempted, when the temptation begins to come, what we normally do is, I would never be tempted to do that. I would never be tempted to do that. No, you are tempted to do that. That means you're spiritually thirsty. So instead of suppressing it and acting like the desire is not there, realize that you have begun to wander away from the pure water that is Jesus Christ. It's very subtle. Nobody wakes up one morning wanting to drink out of the toilet. They go for a couple hours working hard outside, and they go, well, I'm not really that thirsty. I don't really need the water. And then it goes through the whole day, well, I was really busy. And then the next day, well, I at least filled the water cooler up. And then 2 or 3 days later, they're drinking out of the toilet and they're going, what happened? The moment the thirst began to show itself, the moment the desires begin to come, you are seeing that you are spiritually not satisfied in God. So you must seek to be satisfied in Him. Any questions or comments on this?
I know in my situation, to be honest, I have to do a daily, sometimes hourly inventory of myself. I know what my besetting sin is. And you're right, it's very subtle. I can make excuses. I can just try to ignore it. But to be honest, and to try to get to God, to know Him even better each day, I had to do that inventory, and I have to be honest with it. And, you know, I just asked the Holy Spirit to bring back the memories of where I had started going off that track. And you're right, it's very subtle. There are times when I will even say, nah, I didn't really know to do that or want to do that. But it's a struggle. And sometimes I pray and I ask God, you know, why don't you just take it away? Just like the woman at the well. Why don't you just take that away? You know, but I know it's for my growth, spiritually. Mm-hmm. So I know that it's still frustrating. Sometimes it's disheartening. It gets me to question. But it's at that time I go back and I start reading the promises. Because I can get so, in such a turmoil about things, that the only thing that's going to bring me out of it is the Word of God and what mm-hmm. His promises are.
Yes.
And I've got promises marked down to where I go back to those and continually to say them out loud mm-hmm. throughout the day. Yeah. So for me, I wish mine were just taken away.
Mm-hmm.
What? But it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's where the you brought a ton of really good points. We want to keep watch over our soul. Most of us don't. Most of us just kind of like, where'd that thought come from? That was crazy. I would never do that. And then like 5 minutes later we do it. We go, why did I do that for? Well, I would never do it again. And then the next day we do it again. And then most of us never really take the time to go, wait a minute. This thought is here. This desire is here. Where is it coming from? Why is it here? What lie am I believing? What promise? And then as you talk about going to Scripture, what I have to realize many times, fighting against sin, and this is going to sound really bad, but many times fighting against sin is the wrong thing. sometimes I need to go back to the promises of God to satisfy my soul. If you get in a fist fight with yourself over not drinking out of the toilet, you missed it. Solution is go drink out of the faucet. That's the solution. And so often we get caught up in the temptations there, the temptations there, the temptations there. Well, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. No, 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 no. What you need is to go spend time. For me, what I found, I would like to think that I'm spiritual enough to, you know, read my Bible for 5 minutes in the morning and not do anything the rest of the day and be perfectly fine. But what I found is that I need Jesus about every 2 minutes, and that's being arrogant. I really need him about every second. And there are times when I have to stop whatever I'm doing, go for a walk, and pray. That I have to, you know, when I worked at the clerk's office in high school, I took my Bible and read it on my lunch break. Why? Because I couldn't make it the whole workday. I needed a few moments to drink from the living water to satisfy my soul. And I think there's a frustration you mentioned is we just want to go away. We just want to go it away. Why won't God take this away from me? Well, the scriptures have said he's made a way of escape. The issue is that we think that he should take away the temptation the way we want it taken away. This woman is going to have the propensity for this sin. Okay, but we, for whatever reason, we're all born. All we like sheep go astray. We all turn our own way. Some people, they're born with a desire for alcohol. For others, it's sexual sin. For others, it's pride. For others, gluttony, whatever it may be. And whether that's upbringing or family problem, I don't know. Who cares? Okay. The issue is you got a problem. What can you do to satisfy your soul so that your besetting sin does not grow? Okay? You can have it where that besetting sin you live in victory over. But the moment you leave the well of living water, guess what's going to happen to your temptation? It's going to explode. And what we have to do is we have to be watching over our souls every moment. Every moment, walking with Jesus. And when the thoughts come, not just go, well, that was dumb. To go, okay, why am I thinking this right now? Am I truly happy and satisfied in God? Or am I beginning to very subtly... You know, when we think about walking away from Jesus, it's not that we slap him across the face, turn around, and run the other direction. What normally is we kind of drop the hand and we walk, but we're still walking side by side. And then we move 6 inches apart, a foot apart, 2 feet apart, 3 feet apart, 5 feet apart. And then eventually, you know, we're just like the two, you know, it's like the infinite lines of an angle. It's 1 degree. You know, 1 degree on a piece of paper is not even an inch at the edge of the paper. At the end of this room, 1 degree is maybe 2 feet. 10 miles down the road, 1 degree. You're so far, you're out of sight. And that's the way our sin comes. It's a little temptation. And we begin to separate. We've got to keep watch over our soul, like Marie was talking about. Okay, wait. Let's have a spiritual reset here. Let's get back to the Lord. All right.
There's also the lie that, like, I think the parable is really awesome. Actually, an example of the woman, she had committed adultery and had so many husbands that you believe the lie that I'm not. Why would Jesus ever want to have anything
exactly
to do with me ever? And Jesus is so great at showing us counterculturally what Jesus did was so socially snafu, socially incorrect. I mean, the disciples even looked down on him.
Yeah.
And how he, you know, when they came up to him and he'd been talking to that woman, you know what was going through their minds. Why is he talking to her? But we need to be reminded that Jesus demonstrates his love, and that way we're sinners. He died for us, and he's willing to do whatever he needs to do, not because we deserve it, because of who he is. And
yeah.
He is willing to help us and to love us and to empower us and forgive us mm-hmm. of our sin. We will seek him and go. And even when we don't seek him, he does that anyway because of
yeah.
us.
And I would add to it as well, we don't have the time to go through every little thought here. Sometimes we get the temptation of, well, I'm already in the mud, might as well walk
right.
in it.
Right.
And there are people who say, well, I've already been divorced 5 times, what's 6?
Right.
No, there is hope to bring an end to this cycle. Well, what's getting drunk for another week? I've already been drunk 20 years of my life. What's another weekend? No, Jesus brings hope to the people that we would say are socially taboo, that type of stuff. Yes. Oh, yeah.
And that little stuff I was so blind, you know, the fear of him and the part of me. And if a man was holding a gun, you'd do what he said, but you're here.
Yeah.
And Jesus said, you're the one that's not on the body, but catch your soul. You know, if you have that healthy fear, it's true.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you entirely on that one. Having a fear of God is huge. And I think it's also, too, when we begin to entertain thoughts of sin, we also need to go, wait a minute, I'm not fearing God as I should in this moment. And I'm walking away from that. Bryce, you want to close in prayer?